Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside. All right, everyone, welcome back. And there's a bit of a spot the difference going on today. I'm not sure if you can tell, but I think Paulie is in another universe. Where, Paulie, can you hear me? Where are you coming from, mate?
Hello.
Yes, Paulie.
I have a green screen behind me.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, our budget has really, really blown out of the world. We were like, you know what? We could invest in microphones. We could invest in literature and education for ourselves. But no, we invested in stupid shit.
Well, we've actually invested in one green screen because our budget just didn't cut to get two. So I'm still where I am, but we got one green screen for Paulie.
You drew the short straw, Tommy.
That's right.
Our budget is so massive, I bought a brand new house.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. I'm not even Tom. We bought a new person.
I am in a different setting. This is my home, my family home. Welcome. And, you know, I will do the occasional podcast here. For those of you who are listening to this podcast, you don't know what we're talking
about. No, and nothing really matters.
Yep. Continue as you were.
Continue. Yes. Well, guys, today we have a bit of an obscure episode for you, but hopefully a no less valuable show. I think for the first couple of episodes, we've really tried to, you know, just hit some really tangible ideas that we can get across for you, whether it's, you know, optimizing sleep, optimizing exercise, optimizing being a role model. You know, I think it's about 6 or 7, maybe even 8 shows now. But today we're going to hit something a little bit less tangible, but I think it's an important concept because, you know, I mean, even before the show, Paulie and I were really kind of discussing some of the elements that we want to touch on today. And it's a wide topic, but today's show is all about growing old gracefully in the modern age. And, you know, I think straight off the bat, there's a real kind of phobia of aging that not only men have to work through, women especially have to work through, but society in general has to kind of come to terms with. And it's an interesting one, isn't it, mate? Because aging is inevitable, and yet we're so afraid of it as a society.
100%. You know, it was only today that I was having a conversation with somebody about Botox and how it's just become the new normal, whether Botox, fillers, you know, it really doesn't matter how far down the line you go with it. And I'm not here to actually have an argument for or against it. It's just about providing our philosophical kind of tangent on the way we see aging and the way we see the world. And then also in the same breath, understanding how you can actually feel as young as you possibly can as well, because, you know, I feel like a lot of people are going down the path of cosmetic surgery at the same time as doing so many things that are going directly against the superficial outcomes of what they're trying to achieve, but from the inside. So they may have, and let's face it, once, you know, if you've got fillers in and cosmetic surgery all over yourself, you don't necessarily look like you did 20 years ago, but you may, but you're doing things to yourself that will, you know, progressively age you onwards and onwards. So it's an interesting topic to talk about, but I think the responsibility of transitioning into fatherhood as well is also another one that we can kind of talk about that kind of coincides with all of these kinds of aging gracefully and ways that you can go about, you know, having a really beneficial experience whilst doing this.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Well, so, you know, speaking to a father, obviously being yourself, did you notice, so if you think about back on your life, you kind of notice challenging rites of passage, you know, either voluntarily embraced or involuntarily thrust upon, that changed your identity and made you become a different person, you know, becoming old isn't necessarily psychologically just this lovely kind of fluid thing. It's not like a wave in an ocean that moves towards, you know, wherever it goes. Did you feel, was it like an overnight thing for you that you started to feel like a father and therefore take on that new paradigm of aging in that respect in a positive sense? Or what was it like for you?
So I think for me, it happened in stages, and fatherhood was just one of those stages of my own personal development and evolution as a human. And I may have talked about this in the past, but for me, it was like I was single for a very long time. I was the center of my own universe for a very long time. And when I woke up, I could do whatever I wanted and at whatever time I wanted.
Mm.
Transitioning into, you know, being in a relationship and stepping into that sphere, you're sharing your existence with somebody whilst at the same time having time for yourself to be yourself and feel whole within yourself. And then once you step into fatherhood, you're further, I suppose you're now needing to navigate yourself, being able to honor yourself as an individual, being able to honor yourself and your partner as a separate entity, and then stepping into this family unit, being able to honor your relationship with one child and then your relationship with another child. And all these dynamics are really, really delicate. And if you're not kind of conscious of them, and if you're not aware of them, you can be very reactive towards them. And I am still reactive towards them, you know. Yeah. But on those times that I'm really conscious of the way how lucky I am to be a father and how lucky I am to have independent relationships with both my children and my partner, that gives me a little bit of intent behind how I can relate to everybody and myself. And that gives me, I feel lucky to be able to have that forethought and that sense. So to answer your question, stepping into that next realm, it depends how much intent I have given to that transition that gives me the ability to be able to execute my role as a father and that part of my life with a little bit more grace.
Mate, you've touched on something very very kind of intrinsic to growth in psychology, you know, and it's, you know, like I mentioned before, willingly embracing something that's going to have a very, very big effect on you. You know, it's going to change you, you know, proportionally, as opposed to having it thrust upon you. You know, I wrote about this a couple of years ago, you know, this notion that divorcing someone, you know, it's like we're just not ready. We're just not right for each other anymore. And you recognize that that's going to be painful because there's going to be grief and then your identity is going to be extracted out of that and you've got to find yourself again. But you decided to do that. So you're kind of willingly accepting all of life's uncertainties as they fall in front of you, as opposed to coming home and finding your partner in bed with someone else. And then all of a sudden your map of reality changes and you don't know who you are and you can't trust anyone else anymore because you got that wrong. What else have you got wrong? And it has a really damaging post-traumatic effect because you didn't ask for it, but now you have to kind of work through it. And there's that added element of resistance prior to accepting the growth that comes from an experience that you didn't ask for. And I think that can be a difference. And it sounds to me like it's along the same vein of what you're talking about, just this idea of intent. You know, I've stepped into being a father. I was with myself by myself for a very long time, but now being a father and having that intention to be a father, I accept all of the difficulties and the triumphs that come with it.
Definitely. And I think if you don't have that kind of pause and reflection within that transition, it doesn't need to be even fatherhood. We're talking about fatherhood in this instance. But you know, if we talk about you and your partner as well, stepping into that relationship that you guys have chosen to give your independent selves to collectively now, there's a shift. There's a real intent behind it. And once you go through that exercise, I feel like you're not just more aware of what you're doing, but you have the opportunity then to navigate your way through it when challenges come up with almost like a map that is already that you've already gone through in the past to a certain extent in your mind.
Yes, absolutely. We could segue very easily into relationships here, but I think we'll leave that for another episode.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, but so I think one of the things, we'll get back to this idea about aging. I think that the big thing about it is that it's always difficult to do something when there's this preconceived societal expectation or notion or just an implicit agenda. You know, I think if you asked anyone on the street, hey, you know, what do you think of aging and stuff? It's like, oh, it's wonderful. We get lines and maybe people say no against that. But no one will say, oh, it shouldn't happen because it's like, it happens. It's mm-hmm. like the sky shouldn't be blue, you know. Hopefully we wouldn't get a few people saying that. But everything, you know, sex sells, biological signaling, youth, that so much of our marketing is entrenched in that biological signaling. You know, what's emotionally going to get you to buy my product? Well, it's sex and our most primal needs, foods, consumption, connection, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a real difficulty that comes with growing up. And, you know, something my mum speaks to a lot as well is that kind of like middle age, even after middle age, probably after middle age, but in between being, you know, old and kind of middle age, young, it's kind of like almost like a lost generation. You know, we don't know what to do with them as a society. They're still working, but they've got kids that are grown up now. And it's like, that's a real shame because they've given so much, you know, and I feel like there should be more for that generation. Just kind of speaks to that difficulty that we have with aging.
Absolutely. And you're right. They do kind of linger in no man's land for a little bit. And, you know, we've talked about evolutionarily, you know, 1,000 years ago or, you know, hunter-gatherer times, let's call it, you know, that they would have been discarded, really. Because they're just using up resources and there was no need for them. So we've evolved to a point where, you know, there is we're at this stage now where modern medicine is keeping people alive, but the progress or the current status of modern medicine is not, it doesn't focus on the quality of life. And now we're kind of stepping into a little bit of a realm as to, you know, how do we keep ourselves alive for longer, but also increase our longevity in a sense in the quality of the time that we have left on this earth. Yes. So, and I think we talk often from top up, top down, bottom up model, and we can talk a lot about this from that kind of lens. You know, there are lots of things that you can do, and the basics are in terms of aging gracefully, being the title of this episode, is the simple basics, like, you know, exercising regularly, which we know all the benefits. And if you don't, you know, you need to exercise. Yes. You know, your body needs to be oxygenated. It needs to be put under a healthy amount of stress. It needs to be go through that adaptation process and challenge. Similarly, your mind needs to be doing the same thing. We need to be, you know, especially as we age, we need to be engaging in regular strength training because it challenges our muscles, and our muscles, we actually struggle to put on lean muscle significantly more as we age, as we get to that 40, 50-year old age, which means if we don't put on that muscle, then we're just going to wither away. And we see that all the time, still with these aged people who are hunched over because they remained in this state, and they never challenged their bodies to the point to be able to create posture, to be able to create and as I mentioned before, their muscle status diminishes over and over and over again. Till, I mean, I hate to say it, but you I don't know if you've had the misfortune of spending lengthy periods of time in nursing homes, but I have, and it's a pretty full on existence in there, and you just see these walking corpses more often than not, which is pretty rough. So I suppose the challenge is not just to age, or to live longer, if that's what you guys, if that's what we want, but it's to increase the quality of our life as we age.
Yeah. So this is kind of, we're now at the crux of what we wanted to talk about, I think, here. And aging gracefully is, there's an interesting dichotomy that I think we have to manage here, in that how do we push ourselves to ensure that we are still being able to optimize our minds and our bodies whilst not pushing ourselves to the extent of being ridiculous? In other words, knowing where our limits are, because our limits do start to fall as we age. You know, I can't recover as fast from my training as I could 5 years ago, you know, let alone 15 years, 20 yeah. years, you know, but I still have to ensure that I work hard to keep what I have so that I feel good. So this is kind of that dichotomy that we want to start to talk about in terms of how do we manage that.
Absolutely. Understanding what our boundaries are, but also being conscious of not creating artificial shallow boundaries
yes.
either.
Yes.
So to be able to push the envelope to a certain degree, and to always just to let our biology know, and our minds know, and our emotions know that we are resilient human beings, and yep. to create that resilient outer layer of yes. who we are. And that's just been this hormesis concept and this adaptation process that we undergo biologically, mentally. It's proven now through science to be able to continue to do it. But it's like, as a modern world now, we're like, oh, okay, so if we put our body under stress, then we're going to get healthier. Cool. Let's just run into a truck, you know? You know, we tend to do things to the extreme, which then circles me straight back to this obsession with looking younger, you know? I think what you'll find is if you're healthy and you do the things that increase your health and vitality from the inside, your outside will reflect that. And it's very clear in through logic. This that I'm looking at right now with you is skin. It is yep. our biggest organ in our body. Mm. So if we are treating our organs with care, respect, and the ability to be able to give to them, then it will be reflected on your outside layers.
Yes, 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 definitely. So from a practical sense, you know, as we age, you know, we don't want you going from, if you're someone who trains all the time, you know, to just now going for walks every day. But it might just be, you know, if you're someone who used to train 5-6 times a week, you might want to replace one of those sessions with a more passive exercise, you know, engaging in yoga or doing a sauna, or just ensuring you get a bit more sleep, you know, to start to kind of balance the two absolutes out there. And the same thing, you know, and I think what you find is, as you said, when you were talking about doing justice for your emotions and your psychology as well, feeling into what your needs are and then making a decision from there, that doesn't necessarily mean just, oh, well, I can't be bothered, so I'm just going to hang out in front of the TV all day. But not being bothered might mean not going as hard, you know, so it's sustainable. So it's not just one session and then you're buggered for 6 weeks. So it becomes a lifestyle.
100%. And you see that all the time. It's like if you look in the animal kingdom, you have these, you know, these zebras that are, you know, drinking at the lakes, and then a lion comes and they're like, oh shit, you know, they get straight into that sympathetic nervous system, and they'll be like charged and they'll be in survival mode. But as soon as the lion's yes. gone and it's taken one of their brothers or whatever,
yes.
you know, they just go rest in peace. Yes. It goes straight back to, you know, drinking in the lake and stepping back into, you know, that cortisol spike starts to die down.
Yeah.
But as humans, what we've kind of created here is this, this artificial spike in cortisol and adrenaline that continues to be sustained
yeah.
Over and over and over again. And it tends to be kind of created through objects of our own mind and our own societal pressures as well. So I think it's about sometimes using rituals that can nullify and bring that stress level down as well. Even things like, and this is such a massive one, being a part of a community, being a part of a friendship circle, a tribe, people that you can actually engage with and be a part of that is bigger than just who you are. That's a massive thing. It's what innately makes us human. So these are all things that contribute not just to our mental health, but our physical health. And it tends to be whatever we like is good for our physiology in a holistic sense will have some kind of positive effect on our mentality and vice versa.
Yeah. We're always in that, the lion's always running after us in this day and age from a physiological perspective.
Absolutely.
We check our phones, we check our emails from the moment we wake up to the moment we fall asleep. Yeah. As a result, we don't give our minds the time to calm down and process the stimuli that we have been exposed to throughout the day, which makes our sleep terrible. And everything that's going on is basically just saying to this 210 million year old technology, you're unsafe, be prepared. And it's kind of like we've been chased by a bear, run into a cave. There's only one way out, but the bear's there. So sure, we're safe, but we're freaking out at the same time chronically. We're in a chronic state of stress because we're stuck. That's what's really scary about it. And I think what we now have to do in this day and age is intentionally switch off.
Yes.
As you said, engage in a community, power in numbers. That feels good from a primitive perspective. Switching off all of the bullshit, getting out in nature, eating healthily, ensuring you get a really good night's sleep so that you can, if you're someone who wants to go hard in your career or everything, switch it off from time to time so you can.
Absolutely. And it's like choosing the people that you want to be around as well, choosing the environment that you want to be around. Don't just be around a community of people because you hung around them 20 years ago. It may actually be that you guys have naturally, moved in different directions. Choose to be around people that that inspire you, that there's a mutually beneficial soul relationship that you can spend time with, because I guarantee you that's going to give a tremendous amount of value to your human biology, not just your soul and who you are as a human, but like your actual cells will charge as a result.
Man, that's a big one. That's a big one. I think that's another thing that we're, as a society, a little bit, anti. It's that notion of, we're all good at, we all recognize the importance of grieving relationships that can no longer be. But what about grieving communities and old friends and, you guys deviating just because you went to school together or whatever it was? Times change, people change, and this doesn't mean that we all have to remove ourselves from friendship groups, but if you guys are no longer the same people, and of course you're not going to be, because time changes us all. If you guys have grown together, then keep doing it. But if you haven't, then at the very least you can start having, honest conversations. And then if you need to just kind of extend the arm a little bit more, then, by all means.
Absolutely. And there are going to be moments and times where, you practically need to be in people's worlds, and that's totally fine as well. We've talked about this, off camera in the past. I think it's an interesting topic, and it's something that we can, kind of almost like devote an entire episode to, because our social circles, I think, give us so much from a mental health perspective. It's something, if we remain isolated, or at least feel isolated from the world, that is going to do nothing but not good things for your health, both physically and mentally. But, I'm a little bit older than you, Tommy boy.
A couple of months.
But
I think you look better than me, mate.
Well, it's, like I said, green screen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we put all our.
I actually, with that extra budget left over, I did a face off.
Nice. Nice. I was wondering where that
Nicolas Cage's face.
Yeah, I can tell. Well, I mean, I was doing the Excel spreadsheet and I was wondering where the 23 grand of the initial budget went.
Mate, you snooze, you lose.
That's right. That's right.
One thing I have noticed with my physical training is I've noticed that variety has really helped me. I mean, the power and the art of a warm-up, wow, that didn't exist in my 20s. Yes. Being able to do that is great. And I also noticed earlier on I was quite extreme in my pursuits of anything. So yes. I played a lot of music and went on tour a lot when I was in my 20s, and I drank a lot when I was in my 20s, and I woke up and then I'd go hard, go for like a hard run, and I'd constantly be putting, you know, what I thought was balance, but it was actually just living in two extremes.
Yes.
You know, party at night, wake up, swim, run, lift weights, do the whole bit. But the power in just stopping and pausing and not doing anything with intent is also a really wonderful thing to be able to draw one's attention to also.
I think that's a big thing. I think as I'm certainly starting to notice that myself, you know, and it's, I think when we are young, we do operate between two poles and absolutes, you know, it's, oh, you know, I'm one of those people that if I have one drink, I'll have 20, you know, and it's like, oh, I have an addictive personality and, you know, whatever it is, I'll do everything right. I'll sleep when I'm dead. And it's just not sustainable. I think, you know, even beyond, your age, it's hard for human beings to try to find that middle point, that center point, you know, that's the hard thing, I think, for all of humanity. It's, I'm going to have three beers tonight, you know, or I'm just going to do a bit of a warm up and see how I feel for a couple of exercises, you know, because momentum is this crazy thing. You feel good, but then you feel great, and then you're going to go, you know, or it's just, that's really hard. But I think, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, about purpose and all that kind of stuff. And I think in the beginning, it's more about just living intentionally and, you know, doing what you say you will do and finishing what you start. And I think if you make a rule that you're going to finish what you start, what you'll find very quickly is what you're actually capable of and where those boundaries are and where you can push them. You know? And I found that in CrossFit, you know, all the time I would set these workouts for myself and they would be insane. You know, my mind had these notions about how much I could train, and they go, oh, I actually can't do this. Yeah. So I brought it back, found where my edge was, and then started to build from there.
Yeah, exactly. And the results that you're going to achieve as a result of it, not just the tangible results, but the understanding of who you are as a man, also, and people poo-poo this a lot. They're like, oh, you know, you use CrossFit or, physical training as an example. I personally find that physical training is an incredible metaphor and a vehicle to be able to express yourself and also to delve into yourself and understand who you are as a person.
Yes.
You get challenged all the time. You're part of you're part of a team. You need to learn how to communicate. You need to learn how to often discard your ego as well. And if you can learn how to take your learnings from the physical realm and actually bring them into who you are as a man, as a human, then, you know, physical training becomes a tremendous teacher.
Yeah, it absolutely is a vehicle to help you discover yourself. You know, discovering yourself is finding out what you're capable of, what you're not capable of, what you like, what you don't like, being courageous enough to express those things, and then figuring out who you get along with, you know. And obviously life is a giant ceremony for growth, but within that, exercise is a fantastic thing as well. But I think anything that requires consistency is going to help you do that. And obviously you and I talk about exercise and health and well-being a lot because A, that's how we met and became mates, but B, it's an integral part of our lives. But it's all sorts of things, you know, but I think being intentional with whatever it is that you do and using that as a way to discover deeper truths is the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, drawing that background into this longevity talk that we are loosely talking about,
yes.
is, you know, this consistency model, you know, being able to not just do something. Like I know, I think we all have people in our lives that yo-yo diet, and
yes,
you know, you'll see them and you'll be like, hey mate, you know, I lost 20 kilos.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 6 months later, they've put it all back on, and then another 5 kilos, and then it kind of happens, yo-yos up and down. To be able to, you know, approach life in whatever pursuit you want to be able to achieve, whether it's, you know, if you feel like you have 5 kilograms of body fat to lose, to be able to do that in a consistent manner, but an achievably sustainable manner, it shows, it shows conviction and consistency, but B, it shows self-control to not have to go to the extreme, knowing that you've done it before numerous times and then rebounded back. And the science backs that up as well, you know, like that's just one example. Let's look at another example, working on relationships, you
know.
Working on a relationship with your significant other. I mean, my personal perspective of this is it requires conscious attention.
Yes.
And you're not just going, like, you're not going to just kind of continuously feel like, oh, I wake up every day and I'm just, I fall in love with my totally. Wife all over again. It's something that, in my mind, requires attention. And if your expectation is that you're just going to fall in love with your partner over and over again, I mean, I think you might be disappointed without any consistent work. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I totally agree. It is conscious attention. You know, the word love changes. You know, love in the first 6 months is a drug. It's just this giant neurochemical cocktail of dopamine and serotonin. You guys just can't stop having sex, and it's just constant. Like, it's just MDMA times 10 for like 6 months.
100%, like fireworks going off all over the place.
Oh my God, she completes me. Like, it's, you know, it's just fucking crazy. But then love. But
internally, I just want to touch on what you were saying there. It's like a dopamine cocktail. It's like you're just taking ice for 6 months.
Yes. Yes.
Continue.
Bearing in mind, Paulie and I don't actually know what ice is like, at least not whilst we're recording.
Definitely don't do ice and record.
Don't do ice and record. Exactly.
From memory, from our sleep episode, it has a half-life of 10 hours.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't do it 10 hours before
you're done. That's right. but even after that, when that starts to fade, love becomes a verb. You know, it's showing up, it's the doing, it's thinking of the other, and relationships tend to become, if they're good conscious relationships, they become meaningful endeavors where you give to each other. You know, hopefully you don't lose yourself in that as well, it is a verb fundamentally. And then with that attention, that conscious attention, you're always trying to balance. I love working with couples, and Esther Perel is someone who I love reading, and she talks about, she's amazing. Yeah. You want to balance freedom and intimacy. You know, you're always on that spectrum where you're moving between being too close and then being far too far away. And when you're first coming together, there's a whole lot of separation because you guys don't really know each other and what you kind of like. And that increases attraction and dopamine. It's motivational. It's, oh, I'm going to get the reward.
Yeah.
And then what you also want, there's a fear there because you don't trust them yet, you know? Yep. And then after a long time, what tends to happen, I see this in the clinic all the time. Oh, we haven't had sex in a very long time. And I just feel like she's my sister, or he's my brother, or whatever it is. And that's when consciously adding some separation in there and pursuing your own goals. And maybe you want to, you know, spend a bit more time by yourself and find out who you are again, just adds that attraction back into it. Mm. But it's a game that you guys can consistently play for the rest of your life.
Yep, spot on. And to draw, to use that example of the separation and feeling like there's, you know, that to me is also, it's this dopamine hangover.
Right.
Like chemically inside, it's like when you, I don't know, if you were to go out drinking a night before. There's this dopamine kind of hit, but the day after, or you know, who here has gone on a holiday and come back and they've felt that holiday hangover,
yes,
you know,
yes,
because you've just had this explosion of dopamine and now you're back to, you know, beige, black and white life. It's because your current reality that you're experiencing is vast from a chemical perspective, is vastly
well, it's less exciting.
It's less exciting and it's de-elevated from a dopamine perspective. So it's now just about understanding that and working with that. And like you said, using tools within your relationship to be able to dance with it, so to speak.
It is. Yeah, mate. I think we should put a pause there because you and I speak about relationships all the time. I think they'll be an integral aspect of the podcast. You know, we're obviously very interested in relationships and so forth, but
100%. We should get a relationship expert on the podcast. Hey, let's get Esther Perel on the podcast.
You know what? Let's do it. Done. Hey, Esther.
Oh, she's
she's just here actually right now. Yeah, she's having tea. No, but that's good, mate. I think you know, coming full circle, longevity is about, you know, moving with your biological needs, but then also doing that in a frame of what's good for your pursuits as well, and being able to challenge those every once in a while.
100%. I hope this was helpful, guys. If you have any other specific requests or you know, questions about what you would like us to talk about further or delve or flesh out more, even so, let us know, because we're really, really open to discussing anything that you guys want to listen to.
Paulie, always a pleasure, mate.
Always a pleasure, Tommy.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.